Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Loke bhavan jagatina jagaya vicharna
Loke bhavan jagatina jagaya vicharna
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chamya
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chamya
Kashnat kashchit vadiya matiyati nadesha misha
kashchit vadiya matiyati nadesha misha
kimva jana svagatim rachati tanna vidhma
kimva jana svagatim rachati tanna vidhma
loke bhavan jagatina kalaya vicharna
loke bhavan jagatina
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanya
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanya
Kaschit vadiya matiyati nadesha misha
Kaschit vadiya matiyati nadesha misha
Kimvajana swagatim rachate tanna vidma
Kimvajana swagatim rachate tanna vidma
Loke bhavan jagatina kalaya vitirna
Loke bhavan jagatina kalaya vitirna
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanya
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanya
Kaschit vadiyam atiyati nadesha misha
Kaschit vadiyam atiyati nadesha misha
Kimvajana svagatim Kachati tanna vidma
Kimvajana svagatim Kachati tanna vidma
Loke bhavan jagadhina kalaya vartina
Loke bhavan jagadhina kalaya vartina
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanaya
Sadrakshanaya kalanigrahanaya chanaya
Kaschit Vadiyam atiyati nirishamisha
Kaschit vadiyam atiyati nirishamisha
Kimva jana svakritam rachati tanna vidma
Kimva jana svakritam rachati tanna vidma
Loke bhavan jagatina kalaya vatirna
Loke bhavan jagatina kalaya vatirna
Kimvajana svati
स्वकृतं रुचति तं न विद्मः
किं वा जनः स्वकृतं रुचति तं न विद्मः लोके भवान् जगति नाशलयावतीर्णः संरक्षणाय धनिग्रहणाय कन्या कश्चित् त्वदीयमधियामिषा किं वा जना स्वकृतं पृच्छति तं न विद्मः
Hence, what word? Loke.
Loke.
Into this world.
Into this world.
Bhuvan.
Bhuvan.
You.
You.
Jagat.
Jaya.
Of the universe.
Of the universe.
Ina.
Ina.
The predominator. Kalaya.
Kalaya.
With your expansion, Baladev.
With your expansion, Baladev.
Or with your time potency.
With your time potency.
Avitirna,
Avitirna,
having descended,
having descended.
Sat,
Sat,
the Sankling,
Sankling,
Rakshanaya,
Rakshanaya,
to protect,
to protect.
Kala,
Kala,
the wicked,
the wicked.
Nigrahanaya,
Nigrahanaya,
to subdue,
to subdue.
Cha,
Cha,
and
Anya,
Anya,
other,
other. Kaschit.
Kaschit.
Someone. Vadiyam.
Vadiyam.
Your.
Your.
Ati Yati.
Ati Yati.
Transgressors.
Transgressors.
Nidesham.
Nidesham.
The law.
The law.
Isha.
Isha.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Kimba.
Kimba.
Or else.
Or else.
Jana.
Jana.
A person. Swa,
Swa
by himself.
Kritam
created.
Richati
obtains.
Tat
that.
Navidma.
We don't understand.
We don't understand.
Translation and purport by the followers of Divine Grace Asa Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. You are the predominating Lord of the universe, and have descended into this world with your personal power to protect the saintly and suppress the wicked. We cannot understand, O Lord, how anyone can transgress your law and still continue to enjoy the fruits of his work. Purport. Sridhar Swami explains that the kings were bewildered by the suffering that had come upon them. They state here that since the Lord has descended to this world to protect the pious and punish the wicked, how is it that Jarasandha, who brazenly transgressed the order of the Lord, continued to perform his wicked activities, whereas the kings were put into a miserable condition? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur similarly states that the kings could not understand how Jarasandha, who harassed the saintly devotees and nourished the envious, could continue to prosper, whereas the kings were being tormented by the wicked Jarasandha. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada quotes the kings as follows in Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, you are the proprietor of all the worlds, and you have incarnated yourself along with your plenary expansion, Lord Balaram. It is said that your appearance in this incarnation is for the purpose of protecting the faithful and destroying the miscreants. Under the circumstances, how is it possible that miscreants like Jarasandha can put us into such deplorable conditions of life against your authority? We are puzzled at the situation and cannot understand how it is possible. It may be that Jarasandha has been deputed to give us such trouble because of our past misdeeds, but we have heard from revealed scriptures that anyone who surrenders unto you, unto your lotus feet, immediately becomes immune to the reactions of sinful life. We, therefore, wholeheartedly offer ourselves unto your shelter, and we hope that your Lordship will give us full protection. Om Gyanatam Nandasya Gnanjana Shilakaya Chakshu Unmalitam Jena Chasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare,
Hare
Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. So the kings who are imprisoned by Jarasandha have sent a messenger to the Sudama assembly house where Krishna is holding court. This chapter is Lord Krishna's daily activities, and it leads up to the point where Krishna goes to the assembly house. And it talks a little bit about the events there, and then it says, once upon a time, a certain event happened. Previously, I was explaining that kind of the generic day in Krishna's Leela. And then it goes into a specific event. A messenger approached on behalf of kings who had been imprisoned by Jarasandha, a mighty warrior. And they were pleading, basically, for Krishna's mercy. Please help us, save us. Understanding that he was the Supreme Lord. Now, this particular verse, these kings, via their messenger, are expressing a doubt, a perennial doubt, actually. Why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? Even one Christian minister wrote a book by that name. It's an interesting question. You see, the kings, they are saying that Jarasandha, he is brazenly disregarding your authority, acting independently, but still he is enjoying the fruits of his work. He seems to be prospering, powerful, strong, rich, lots of influence. Whereas we, religious kings, we have been overwhelmed by him, and we are under his, we are in his prison now. How can this be? Their mood is not one of blaming the Lord. It's just one of great bewilderment, the Acharyas explain. They're bewildered. How can this be? And the conclusion, as Srila Prabhupada states, is that you protect anyone who is fully surrendered. Therefore, we surrender. So this is a common doubt. It's a common question. Surely if we're honest and religious, we should prosper. And those who are irreligious and nasty, simply trying to get ahead in the world, to corner the chessboard, secure the positions of power, and be ruthless, how can they get ahead? And it seems like the world actually works to the advantage of the ruthless. You know, the politician or the king, and there's some rebellion quelling among the civilians. This is coming up, you know, building, boiling amongst the civilians. So he sends his soldiers in there, arrests the key influencers, and in a public spectacle, cuts them open and burns their bodies. Just like the Guy Fawkes influence incident, where some Catholics who have been suppressed by the government but what we'll do is we'll blow up Parliament with some gunpowder and kill the current Prime Minister and then put in a Queen Elizabeth, who was actually a Catholic, on the throne, and then we won't be suppressed anymore. So they tried to do that, but they got caught. And what they did to those people as a public spectacle was to hang them, draw them, and quarter them. Which is, you can't imagine that kind of pain, what that actually means. And they do it in a public way, to show, you know, overstep the boundaries of our power, you know, and we'll punish you, we'll cut you down. So it seems like the whoever's got the biggest guns, the best firepower, they're actually going to control and enjoy in the world, and not the meek and humble. The Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. But practically we see that, no, those are the biggest guns and the most ruthless political mind. They rule the world, actually. There was one friend of mine, a very intelligent Indian, Sri Lankan, actually, and read a lot of books. And he went through a period of his life, he was telling me, where he read a lot of books on the state of the world politically, and the domination of the capitalistic empire, and how they control things and so forth. And it's just like in Afghanistan. You know, they sent in some, the two towers came down somehow or other. You know, there's different theories that actually it was all staged by the US government. US government knocked down its own towers and then said, hey, we have to fight against the war against the evil terrorists from Afghanistan. So they send in a big army to Afghanistan and waste all the Taliban and so forth, the Al-Qaeda, and then they, of course, secure the resources, the oil fields and so forth. So from one point of view, you know, one theory is that it's all a big, you know, looking at the situation of the world, oil's running out and so forth, the capitalistic empire is simply cornering the monopoly board, so to speak. We'll get the resources for this. So, to secure the future of our capitalistic empire. Other theories are that actually, no, the Al-Qaeda, the Muslims, were feeling suppressed by the Christians, and this was a statement of protest against the capitalistic empire, which the two towers were the crown or the symbol. So they fly a couple of planes into them, knock them down, and fight back. It's a way of flipping the bird at the power mongers. But of course, what happened? They got crushed, completely crushed. They, with relatively small numbers of troops, but with incredible technology, the U.S. Army wasted the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Just bombed them. Incredible weaponry. You know, you can't believe planes flying so far up you can't practically even see them. You can drop bombs and destroy entire city blocks. You know. And all sorts of guns and night vision goggles. Incredible technology produced out of the industrial advancement. And all, cutting edge technology. Cutting edge technology. Actually, what pushes on technology more than anything else is war. It's like I was working on Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings. But then after that, beginning of last year, I was working on a film. I was working for Peter Jackson, who was a film director, and he had a hobby of making. He had an interest in World War I warplanes, which are basically wooden structured planes with a big engine in them, and they're basically a big kite with an engine in them. It's a wooden plane with a canvas covering, and it flies, and they put machine guns on it. And you know, that was like NASA level technology in World War I. That was actually the advance in this Air Force which won the war, because when you've got Air Force, they can fly over and drop bombs and machine gun each other. They can fly over, you know, normally you dig trenches and you hold off, and anybody tries to charge your trenches, you just pop up with a Gatling gun and mow them down. But the planes could just fly straight over the top, drop bombs, and so many things. So it was the Air Force, actually, that made the difference in the war. And in the end, it became between the Germans and the English, under the generalship of Winston Churchill. It became a race who could produce the most planes and advance the technology. And they developed technological advancements whereby they could fire a machine gun through a spinning propeller. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. This propeller's spinning around so many revolutions per minute, and you somehow you get all the bullets in between the blades. And of course, that meant that in a gunfight, in a dogfight, you know, the person had much greater advantage because they could see through the propeller. And normally, normally it wasn't so easy. So it was this necessity of, to win the war that caused such technological advancement. And of course, the government sponsored so many PhDs, so many university students to do their research, and they're thinking, well, I'm studying, I'm being creative and this and that. Very well, and the government's of course sponsoring them, but they're looking for what is going to A, increase our military power, and B, what is going to also provide economic power to the nation. In this way, the Brahmanas are bought off by the Vaishyas. Kshatriyas are there in the government, but they're also bought off by the Vaishyas. Just like one comedian, he once said, people blame me because I don't vote, This is my attitude, You got two puppets. Are you going to vote for the puppet on the left or the puppet on the right? Hang on, the same guy is holding both puppets. So who's holding the puppets? The corporate empires. So Rabbi was saying, he's reading all these books and opening his mind to these realities, because these realities, we live in a pretty little insulated world, most of us, and we just think, how am I going to pay my bills, and maybe it would be good to increase my income a bit, and this and that. We don't understand the situation of this world, who's in control. Our little lives as civilians, as peasants, are just insignificant compared to the people who are making the decisions that are really affecting the world in a big way. So he was thinking, I'm just so frustrated, so angry at what's going on in the world. And we can't do anything, Google Earth. There is a program on the internet called Google Earth where you can zoom in from outer space. Like, you got it on the computer screen, you got this planet revolving, and then you can zoom in and you can see this building. You can see Prabhupada House, and then this building you can see, and you can even see cars in the car park. It's not real time. It's not real time. It only gets updated every time a satellite flies overhead and gets a clear photograph. The point is, you can just log onto the internet and zoom in. I zoomed in on my parents' house, and then I zoomed in some, into Delhi, in India as well. You can do that. You spin the earth and zoom in. So if that's available to the general mass of people on the internet, what do you think the, corporations and the politicians, and the, especially the military force, has a, what sort of technology do you think they have? So he was saying, we're so powerless actually against these type of people. It seems like, they're ruthless, they're selfish, they're short-sighted, they're destroying the world. They seem to have so much power. And it seems, that the meek, the godly, just by their nature of not wanting to exploit everyone, they get trampled on. Seems like that. Just like in India. India was, for so many centuries, raided by so many different countries and pillaged. But by the nature of the religion, the Vedic religion was kind of, in many respects, quite peaceful, quite passive. The people weren't driven to fight back and to advance their armies and technologies and so forth. Because of their godliness, their focus wasn't so much on how to get ahead in the world. So, instead, the British come in with all their guns and stuff and just occupy the place with relatively few soldiers. Control the country. So this is a common doubt and question that people have, you know. How come the selfish and the ruthless, the adamic people, how come they have so much power in the world? Where the Lord says in the Gita that my devotee doesn't perish. Here the kings are asking, Dharma Artha Karma Moksha. They're transgressing. Darasana is transgressing Dharma. Still he's getting Artha and Karma. He's still getting prosperity and sense enjoyment. How is that? Especially since you're here and you're supposed to be defending the faithful and destroying the irreligious. So this is the doubt being expressed. So of course Krishna will, since they surrender, Krishna will actually protect them. Krishna will rescue them. Taking advice from Uddhava, he will go to Jarasandha with Bhima and Arjuna, dressed as brahmanas, and Bhima will tear Jarasandha in half, and liberate the kings. Krishna says that I have a twofold mission statement. I come, A, to give pleasure to the devotees, to enjoy relationships with the devotees and take them back to Godhead. And I also come to regulate this material world. See, this is the thing we have to understand. This material world is full of conditioned souls. And conditioned souls are envious by nature. They're selfish by nature. The world, just by, you know, the worst thing about prison, people say, is not, you know, being locked up. It's not, it's not the inconvenience of having your freedom restricted. That's not the worst thing. The worst thing about prison is the other people. Worst thing about prison is the other people are harassing you all the time and their consciousness. And it's horrible, you know. Locked up with them. So that's the same with the material world. The worst thing about the material world is the other conditioned soul. One of the threefold miseries is adibhautik. That the misery is caused by others. So that's just the nature of this world. The material world is like a sandpit. You know, because in one sense it's temporary, like sandcastles are temporary. You know, they build them up and then you knock them down, and it's all just sand ultimately. So this whole world is just matter, and it takes on different forms. And we build our sandcastles and have our pies in the sky and so forth, and then it all eventually just returns to ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So it's a sandpit like that, but it's also a sandpit because. If your kids, you know, kids want to be rowdy, active, so you put them in the sandpit, and then they fight with each other. I'm the king of the castle, yeah? And they drive their trucks and they play in the sandpit. It's all a big illusion, actually. The whole, you know, the jostling for position in the sandpit. And gaining some position, you know, gaining some so-called power and position within the sandpit. It's all a big illusion. So, in the same way that the conditioned souls, you know, they're playing the game, believing it's a reality, actually, in the material world. And sometimes, it does seem that those who are ruthless and determined to control and enjoy, they'll rise up. And what the devotee has to do is understand that these people are not free. They're not actually enjoying. They're not controlling. They are fully under control. Who are the real kings of this material world? Rukmini Devi explains. the three modes of material nature. Their consciousness is bound up. They are forced to act. And they're forced to suffer as well. This whole materialistic enterprise, materialistic civilization, there is some prosperity now. As the earth has been raped and ravaged for all their resources. There is some prosperity now. But we're coming to the edge of the cliff. In one sense, just even the very fabric of society is eroding. What is that? The family. The consciousness of each member of this society. What is keeping everybody happy is the illusion of consumerism. We have so much money in Australia. There's so many things you can go and buy, so much cool technology, cool gimmicks and gadgets. And everybody kind of cooperates and goes shopping. And hey, honey, I bought something today. Well, I'm so proud of you. Funny cartoon on the internet. On Panda Disco. It's really classic. Yeah, everybody's... because there's stuff to buy, because there's consumerism, there's an illusion of peace. But you just wait, you know. Some depression comes along, some war breaks out. Things will descend into chaos. If the thin illusion of law and order in society, if that is removed, some dictator gets into power, then you'll see the whole illusion come crashing down. This is Kali Yuga. It's going to be like that. There's not much you can do about it. No point in getting depressed. Better to get out. Still, the devotees, they within their own communities, within our own communities, we're cultivating culture, cultivating real awareness. And while everything is peaceful, we've got to make the most of our opportunity to preach, make advancement. Definitely, we have to make the most of preach and make advancement. And ultimately, it's true that the devotee who has surrendered unto the Lord is protected by the Lord. We shouldn't have doubt in this. Despite the, if you look at the big world and speculate, it looks like, you know, sometimes the pious are suppressed. Maybe externally. But they are protected by the Lord internally. They do have shelter, actually. They truly surrendered. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he was in a very dangerous situation, persecuted by those all around him. Most of all, his father, who was supposed to be his protector, he was born into a family of demons, although he was a devotee. But he took shelter of the Lord, and you see the Lord protected him. Then the heart of the devotee is protected. This material world, it's very most unlikely that, you know, all the conditioned souls are going to be converted to Krishna consciousness or to God, godliness. It's just the nature of the material world, it's why it's here. Sure, we can make some pockets in this material world, Krishna consciousness, and bring people in and create a portal back to the spiritual world. And invite people, stand at the edge of the portal and invite people to come and return back home, back to Godhead. But we have to understand the nature of the material world for what it is and not be an illusion about that. There's free will, and therefore some conditioned souls will remain rebellious against the will of the Lord. And that means there's going to be competition, there's going to be politics, there's going to be jostling for position, jockeying for position, and all the violence and aggression that goes with it. But still, we have relative peace and shelter at the moment, so we should make as much advancement as we can. So these are quite heavy realities, actually. If we really think about it, things are pretty heavy. I mean, we shouldn't, and different devotees have different degrees of being able to assimilate that and remain peaceful and remain, others get very scared and worried, though they just, perhaps it's not good to think too deeply about these things, just carry on. But But you know, some leadership in Krishna consciousness, the Krishna consciousness movement, really needs to think about and understand the situation of the world and prepare strategically how to deal with everything. And know that if we do take shelter of the Lord, we will be protected. Even if it looks externally there's persecution going on, in the consciousness of the devotee, he will have shelter. Just like this one devotee who recently left his body in Mayapur, Nuguna. Prabhu Koma was reporting about it on his blog, and how his experience of leaving this world was completely different from a normal materialist who was just in fear and often alone. He was surrounded by his devotee friends. He was able to enter into a spiritual trance. He was peaceful. He wasn't scared of death because he had knowledge, and he had devotion. He knew how to take shelter of the Lord. This is the cultivation of the devotee, is cultivating how to take shelter of the Lord. Purujan Prabhu likes to say there's two ways, there's two things you can do. You can chant the holy name, or you can take shelter of the holy name. Very different. Chanting the holy name, rat tat tat, rat tat tat. Or taking shelter of the holy name, Krishna, Krishna, please engage me in your devotional service. It's important to learn how to take shelter of the Lord. And sometimes, you know, you can look at the devotees in Kazakhstan, they're a little bit persecuted, actually a lot persecuted. I was talking to Jananda Swami about this, and he was saying, yeah, but in one sense, they're really taking shelter. It forces them. A bit of turmoil for the devotee. The devotee doesn't go, oh, woe is me, and get all depressed. The devotee just holds on tighter to the Lord's lotus feet. So sometimes a bit of turmoil, a bit of danger. The material world itself is dangerous, but we forget that. So sometimes a bit of overt manifestation of danger will really bring out our devotion and our, we'll really take shelter of the Lord. So in one sense, that's actually the Lord's mercy. It's not a bad thing to have a bit of danger. That's why it's good for devotees to make an extra endeavor to have marathon periods where you push yourself beyond what you normally think is capable, beyond what you normally think you're capable of, and take shelter. Just like soldiers, you know, they go to wars and so forth. It's very intense, you know. You can just imagine being on a battlefield and any minute you can be shot, and you're seeing your comrades getting shot and dying. You know, it's not that they just get hurt, they die, you know. You know, somebody you knew, and then the next day they're gone, you know, they're dead. So the battlefield pulls people together very tightly. It's got a certain intensity about it. And the camaraderie, the mateship, is very intense and strong. And then often when these soldiers come back to peace times, all the civvies, you know, the civilians, are just walking around just in this consumeristic daze with quite shallow sort of an experience of life, and living quite superficially, they get depressed, you know. They think, well, the intensity of life is lost because of the illusion of comfort and safety and enjoyment. It dulls life, actually. So in the same way, to have a challenge, to have a mission in life, in Krishna consciousness, this brings out the intensity of our Krishna consciousness. So a marathon period is coming up. You should make a plan to make an extra sacrifice, to push yourself, and to take shelter of the Lord. My Guru Devi says that, you know, it's the marathon periods, it's those periods where you really made an effort to taste the mercy of the Lord, to enter deeply into a devotional meditation, when you did something beyond what you thought you could do. It's those periods that you remember in your life. So make an effort. Life should be epic poetry. Life should be exciting. Make it exciting. Do something. Do something special. You know, practice Krishna consciousness with a bit of intensity. And then it will all come to life for you. Especially if we're young and passionate, we need strong engagement to keep us entertained, to keep us engaged. Otherwise, if we become too complacent, then Maya can easily creep in. So, we will see that actually Krishna does step up and give shelter to the kings and destroy Jarasandha. And this can increase our faith. And more than that, we need to see it practically in our own life by learning how to take shelter. And then our faith will grow. And the more we experience the shelter of the Lord, the more we will, our faith will grow, and the more we will give up our attachment to this, to the illusory shelter of the material world. Because there is no shelter here. We have to get that realization. There is no shelter in the material world. It appears that there is some shelter, but there is none. On that note, I'll finish up. Anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
When you're doing the distribution, like, we often like come across aggressive people and like motivation goes down, and sometimes you feel okay, you know, like your false ego, like you battle with your false ego and your good person, bad and evil part.
Mm.
So how to maintain that while doing a book distribution, like, okay, you know, I'm doing, because we know, we back of the mind, we're knowing that, okay, we're serving the Supreme Lord, you're pleasing Prabhupada, and that is the best service we can do for Prabhupada.
Mm.
But, so.
I think you have to not take it personally. If somebody is aggressive, there's a statement by a leadership and self-help teacher. He says, hurting people are easily hurt and they also hurt others. So what that means is, you know, somebody's got a problem, they suffer, and they also cause others to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you have a splinter, just say I've got a splinter in my hand and it's got infected and it's all swollen up, and then I say, hey Abhishek, shake my hand, you know, and you grab my hand, and then I, you know, get angry at you. It's like, is it your fault? Is it your fault? No, it's because I've got a septic sore on my hand, you know, and you just touched it lightly, but it hurt like anything for me. So, at the same time, if people are very aggressive, and you haven't done anything to aggravate them, which I can't imagine you would, you know, sometimes devotees do have a rough approach, and therefore, you know, if you approach people like that, you can expect a bad, you know, a certain reaction. But if you're polite and cordial, friendly, and, you know, your mood is I am the servant of these people, and somebody still is aggressive in response to you, you don't take it personally. Understand that that person's actually suffering. That's why they are lashing out. Yeah, so that's one thing you can work through that mentally, and gradually, as you get more experience, you know, you become more thick-skinned because you see so many things. You know, you might go through 10 people and they all swear and cuss at you, and storm off down the street. You know. But then, you know, suddenly the next person you talk to, they're interested and they get a book and, you know, they become a devotee. So those who have been preaching for some time, they know that, you know, many come, many go, but some stay. And those people that do stay, And, you know, you see them so grateful and so enthusiastic in Krishna's service. When you see them, you think, well, it's all worth it, you know. It's all worth it, just for this, even if just for this one person, you know. So, a mantra I've heard from experienced book distributors. I mean, I haven't done a huge amount of book distribution in my devotional life, but I have heard a mantra from a book distributor that he uses when things get tough. His mantra is, just keep going. Just keep going. And then, you know, eventually the mind will come back to balance. You just keep going. Because it's the mind. The mind is like up and down, sometimes enthusiastic, sometimes not. Honor and dishonor, heat and cold, they come and go. If you just keep going, eventually you'll see that. That's all. It's all just like transient. You know, the real thing is to do the service, because the service itself, that is eternal. That is the eternal nature of the soul. So we should remain fixed, be in awe with a devotee, not just say, "Oh, it's a nice day. I think I'll do some devotional service." And then the next day, "Oh, it's a bit stormy and rainy in my mind today, so I'm just gonna feel sorry for myself." We should become an all-weather devotee. And then, by remaining steady, by taking shelter of our service, we will see the transient nature of our mental states. It's like, one time I was very mental about something, and I was supposed to be doing cooking lunch for the devotees, and I said to the senior devotee, who was looking after the ashram, I said, "Oh, I'm feeling a bit mental about this." And he said, "That's all right. Just carry on with your prescribed duties." I went, "Oh, okay." I did that, and you know, of course, time passed, and I felt better. It says in Bhagavad Gita that one shouldn't lament in times when times are down. And one should not get over exuberant, you know, "Yes, yes, yes," when things are good, you know. Because attachment to one means attachment to the other as well. Yeah? Flip side, same coin, pleasure and pain, happiness and distress. You become attached to that currency, that coin, you've got to take both sides. So in devotional service, you know, we're not looking for honor on the street by distributing books. We're not, you know. Damodara Swami says, if you want to be a preacher, don't expect to be appreciated. It's the wrong motivation. Sometimes you will be appreciated. Sometimes people will blame you. But just be attached to pleasing your spiritual master, pleasing the acharyas, pleasing Krishna. And the service itself will help you become transcendental to these things. So that's what you remain attached to. Is that okay?
Thank you so much.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Contra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.